Okay.
Yeah.
How do I start the show?
I should have. I've got puppets. Actually, the kids have like puppets. I should have actually brought a puppet along with me and held them up in the frame and talked through my alter ego. I actually was performing as a puppet last night.
I have a sock there, but it's a bit sort of sticky. Will that do?
It's the gym.
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where each week we pick our favourite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host Kevin, a writer of one and a bit films and three and a bit episodes of TV. And as always, I'm joined by my favourite Muppet, a writer of three films, plus a Christmas special, Will Collins.
Hiya, Kevin. I got no hands stuck up my bum.
You what?
I don't have a hand stuck up my bum.
Oh, right. Will, I'm very worried about this episode.
Why? Why would you possibly be worried? This is the Muppets.
The reason I'm nervous is it's just the two of us. Can we do this?
I doubt it.
It's been a whole season of guests, and now it feels very drafty in here. It's just the two of us again. It's like the guests have gone home.
I feel like there's more room for activities. I just kind of wanted to hop on the different seats, and I just want to stretch my legs.
Step brothers.
Oh yeah, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling the space. I can just undo the top button on my pants. I can just relax a little bit. The muffin top's happening. Yeah, let's just stretch out and enjoy the space and the freedom, Kevin. The guests have left.
I feel rusty as all hell because this is the first episode this season that I've hosted where we don't have a guest. And oh my God, man, I have to say, this season, right, when we did the Whodunits episode, I was like in heaven. We were going right through all these movies that I hadn't seen before, and it was like just uncovering gem after gem after gem. And with the Muppets last week, when we got this topic, I thought, this will be easy. There's not many Muppet movies. There's tons of Muppet content, but I didn't realize how much I would come away with a whole new appreciation for Jim Henson and what he pulled off. And how special the Muppets are, because right now, no word of a lie, Will, I would die for the Muppets. I'd die for them. They are a gift, and I think if you've got kids out there, if you don't have kids, go back and revisit the movies.
Yeah.
Go back and sort of just like let them wash over you, because the message is behind what the Muppets represent and the ethos of the Henson Company. It's really special, I think, and in terms of pop culture, I think the Muppets just, the world is better that the Muppets exist, and every childhood should have the Muppets in them, especially the OG Muppets.
Oh, Kermit, Miss Piggy, Fozzie, absolutely. And of course, like, it is all, like, you know, it's Jim Henson. It's his soul, I suppose, externalized to the world through, you know, his art and his craft, but they were brilliant. They were absolutely fantastic.
That was the thing. I didn't realize, you know, because when you grow up and you sort of, you have Jim Henson and you're always seeing that sort of credit appear whenever the Muppets are on, whether it's the Muppets or Fraggle Rock or Sesame Street or what have you, and you see that credit, you sort of just take it in as, it's like a brand. You separate the brand from the person, but as I was like diving into the history of the Muppets and what it took for them to get the original TV show up and running.
It's the Muppet Show with our very special guest star, Mr. Steve Martin.
And get it on the air. This was an independently produced TV show that was kickbollock and scrambled to begin with, where they didn't even have the budget to bring in guests to London where they were shooting.
It's time to play the music. It's time to light the light. It's time to meet the Muppets on the Muppet Show tonight.
Because they didn't have the support in the US for the show,
yeah,
to get it up and running, where by the its heyday, from 1976 to 1981, in those 5 years, it became the most popular TV show on the planet.
It was watched by 230 million people.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was watched all over the world. It was a hit everywhere.
I do remember growing up, the odd time that it was only on the BBC, I'm pretty sure. We didn't have it on RTE channels. But there was an odd time when I did manage to see BBC, and it used to be on a Sunday night. And it was like...
Is that when it was on? Okay.
It was on it, I'm pretty
sure. Because I have a memory of watching it.
I'm pretty sure it was on a Sunday night, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but it was a weekend show. It was like, you know, the weekend programming. All the best stuff was on the weekend, or at least for me anyway, it was always the best stuff was on at the weekend. And the Muppets show was a prime show. And it was a half hour long, if I'm right. And you really did feel like it was... something special, an event that every time you watch this, it wasn't shoddy, it was bursting with creativity and fun and laughs, and the comedy was mature but also silly enough that it played to me and my parents. It was great.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
It was Saturday Night Live for a family audience.
Yeah.
A lot of the puppeteers and the writers on that staff actually worked on Saturday Night Live. But I have a memory, because it was on reruns on the BBC for a long time, because I can remember sitting on my dad's lap and watching The Muppet Show. Now, my dad would not sit down and watch like He-Man with me or The Flintstones or what have you.
Mm.
But we'd watch The Muppet Show together.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely a shared viewing experience.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
And so, like, from those humble origins where they were just getting enough money to make an episode at a time, even if they had never done another thing, or even if Jim Henson had never done another thing, that would have cemented him in pop culture forever, because there was nothing else like it before it, then, or no. And some people now will compartmentalize them, and they'll say Sesame Street are separate from the Muppets and Fraggle Rock is separate from the Muppets and what have you, but they are all Muppets. It's just that they're split off into different brands. But if we're talking about like Kermit, Miss Piggy, those guys, they did 11 TV series, so 120 episodes of the Muppet Show. They did 8 feature films, which I guess we're going to talk about. They did 2 TV movies, and they did 26 specials. So those are like the Christmas specials and the musical specials they do, like Miss Piggy's Variety Hour and stuff like that. So they've never really left pop culture from sort of getting their start in the 50s on the Sam and Friends show.
WRC-TV, Channel 4, Washington.
Sam and Friends is brought to you by...
Askers.
So this is where I'm a bit fuzzy on my history. So was Kermit the Frog the first character Jim Henson became, I suppose, famous for having?
Yeah, well, so Kermit was his character. That was the one that he identified the most with. And I watched a really great documentary series on YouTube on, I think it's Defunct TV is the name of the channel. And it's all about the history of Jim Henson and the Henson Company and the Muppets themselves. And it covers his basically early start with the company, getting the family together, the troupe of puppeteers that became the characters that we know and love, right up until his passing in 1990, where he died sort of very suddenly of just pneumonia. He just picked up a bad bout of pneumonia and it just whipped him.
Wow.
And you know, you're sitting there and you're thinking, this is the Muppets, it's fun, it's irreverent, some of it's not as good as others, some of the movies aren't as great as you want them to be. But by the end of it, I was watching, like, there's a moment in Jim Henson's funeral where the Muppets themselves learn of the passing of Jim Henson.
Okay, everybody, gather around. It's finally time for the Jim Henson tribute production number.
Oh, boy, okay, all right, okay.
Member, come in on the second chorus.
Oh, and, yes.
Accountants. Hey, don't tap dance until we fly in the giant 1040 form. And, Scooter, Gonzo, come on, help me with this thing. Move it out of the way. Wait, ho. What's this?
What?
Never noticed this before. It says, for Fozzie, these might inspire some ideas for the tribute number. These are real letters. Oh, from Jim's fans. Oh, boy.
Read them.
Should I?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, see. It says, Dear Kermit, my cousin Diane has a pet frog, and she named him Kermit. And he could say hi just like you.
Aww. Aww. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, really... I feel very sorry that your best friend Jim died. What? Died? Jim died?
But we were just starting to get to know him.
And just like in Sesame Street, where a puppeteer had died and they decided not to lie to children, not to say that the character had gone away to a different place to live or what have you, they actually just spoke it out and said that the character had died and that the character is no longer going to be around. And they explained to children what death meant.
Oh my God.
And that's a beautiful moment in the Sesame Street. It shows you what Sesame Street were all about. But they did similar with the Muppets, where all of the Muppets who were puppeteered by friends of Jim Henson, apart from Kermit, who was puppeteered and voiced by Jim Henson himself, they had a sort of a tribute to him, where Fozzie is trying to put on a tribute show for Jim Henson. And this is usually, you know, on the Muppet Show, it would be Kermit that is trying to run the show, and he's, you know, he's getting exasperated by Miss Piggy and Fozzie and everyone sort of like screwing up. But this is Fozzie trying to do it by himself, and he's struggling, and he finds a folder, and the folder is all the letters of children and viewers. I'm going to get choked up now. That are sort of commiserating.
I'm getting goose pimples.
That are commiserating with the Muppets for the death of Jim Henson.
While falling asleep that night, our 5-year-old daughter Blair said, "It's a good thing there are people who can do Jim Henson's job. He'll be with us every time we watch the Muppets. He'll be able to see them from heaven. The Reeser family, Las Vegas, Nevada."
And you get to see the Muppets sort of like reacting to that, and they're sort of shocked about Jim Henson, and they're sort of, they want to learn more about him. And Kermit is not there, and you're wondering, where is Kermit? When I sort of knew that Kermit wasn't there because that was Jim Henson's puppet and somebody else was going to have to fill those shoes. And Fozzie has a bit of a wobbler and he says, "I can't do it. We can't do it.
Cancel.
What?
Cancel. Cancel the production number. What? Cancel everything.
What about the tribute?
I did it all wrong. I mean, when you read these letters and when you know how much people loved him, we can't do a tribute to him."
And Robin, Kermit's nephew, the little frog, he sort of steps up and he says,
"Kermit thought we could."
"Oh, but Robin, all we have is silly songs and whoopee cushions.
Maybe that's enough."
"No, you've got the magic within you. And I'm going to get choked up again. This is the fucking Muppets." And it's like, it's getting...
Do it. You can get through this, Kevin. Get through it.
I'm having a breakdown, Will. he starts telling him, if it's just one person that believes in you, then that can spread, and then it'd be just two people that believe in you. And all the Muppets start to sing this song, coming together, until Kermit appears in the doorway and he's watching them.
"Take what you got and fly with it."
"Fly with it? Kermit says that?"
"I think he learned it from Jim. You know, this Jim Henson may be gone, but maybe he's still here too, inside us,
and
believing
in
us."
You realize that this is one of the puppeteers who's taking over for Jim Henson, who'd voiced the character and puppeteered him for 30 years. And it's all of Jim's friends singing, you know, "You can do it.
If just one person believes in you, deep enough and strong enough believes in you, hard enough and long enough, before you knew it, someone else would think, if he can do it, I can do it. Making it two whole people who believe in you, deep enough and strong enough believe in you."
But when you realize that the puppeteers themselves are the characters that you see, that they're an extension of who they were, their personalities, their relationships to one another, there's just a lovely ethos of this sort of vaudeville troupe of oddballs and misfits creating these colorful extensions of themselves. And that's the message that they put out into the world, which is, with a lot of the Muppet stories, it's about them working together to achieve their dreams. And success comes from believing in each other and loving one another.
Three whole people, why not four? And if four whole people, why not more? And more, and more. And when all those people believe in you, deep enough and strong enough, believe in you, hard enough and long enough, it stands to reason, hear your what everybody sees in you. And maybe even you.
Maybe even you.
Can believe in you.
A good song. I knew you guys could do the tribute for Jim.
Was it really okay?
It was terrific. You guys were great.
Yeah, that just broke me, man.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Really fantastic. I have to watch that. We have to put that link in the show notes and I have to watch that. That is beautiful and I love the way they addressed his passing because, you know, not to get down in the dumps about anything, but not to get too dark with things. But yeah, we had in our family we had to deal with some heavy bereavement last year as well, and our biggest kind of concern was how do we tell the kids, like, what do we say to kids? But the thing about it is the bereavement counsellor we had was said...
You had a bereavement counsellor?
Yeah, one of these things, we had a bereavement counsellor, yeah. But she said, just tell him the truth. And it was the best thing we did because, you know, the idea entered our world about death. And, you know, it was up to them to figure out death as they moved on over the next few months. It was about figuring it out for themselves after the fact, like you're saying with Fozzie there, having to figure out how he can go on. And, you know, but I just think it's such a brave and bold move. It's particularly back in the 90s, wasn't it? You know, it was, you know.
Yeah, 1990.
It was sophisticated, really sophisticated and brave and a bold thing for him to do. And mighty
but remember,
stuff.
As we were talking about on the Question of a Kids episode, kids stuff back then was anything goes. So the Muppets being like supportive of one another, it was an elixir compared to what you were getting with even Jim Henson's other stuff. Like, I want to touch on some of his other films as well, apart from The Muppets, especially Dark Crystal.
Yes.
So I guess the good way to do this is to go back to who Jim Henson was. Jim Henson was a bit of an avant-garde artist. He didn't want to be defined by the Muppets. He just wanted to perfect what the Muppets stood for and what they were about. He created the Sesame Street because some mothers out there have children that are never going to get the advantages and the education that other kids will have. So there should be a show that teaches them the basics, like spelling and counting and things like that.
Sesame Street was brought to you today by the letter P. Oh, and by the number 2. Bye-bye.
How to get to Sesame Street.
The Muppets were a sort of a family, and he loved working with all the puppeteers, and he thought it was a great way to tell stories. But once he had sort of mastered what the Muppets were, he wanted to move on to the next thing. And one of those sort of passion projects, a dream project for him, was Dark Crystal.
In a place outside time lies a mystical realm of sound and vision. A wondrous civilization. Where good and evil struggle to possess the Dark Crystal.
But in order to get Dark Crystal made, he had to agree to do a sequel to the Muppet movie, which is why he directed the Great Muppet Caper. That was part of the agreement. Because the original Muppet movie, which came just as the series was ending, was a huge hit. They spent $8 million making it, and it made $65 million at the box office. So to do something that was so dark and experimental as Dark Crystal.
A movie in the making, but a movie unlike any other ever made. When it's completed, not a single human being will appear on the screen, for a whole new world has been created. The world of the Dark Crystal, inhabited only by strange and magical creatures.
Which was a lot more out there in Jim Henson's mind than what we eventually got. You know, the Skeksis and the whole banquet that went on for a lot longer and was a lot more terrifying with all these characters just speaking gibberish and what have you.
Ah, dessert! Oh, Rory! Oh.
Dessert!
Not bad at all.
He had to make the Great Muppet Caper, which was a sequel, and he did that back to back with Dark Crystal. And Dark Crystal then was a critical flop, and it didn't make any money at the box office.
It was a critical flop. I wasn't aware of that.
People did not like that film at all, and that really affected him. You know, the Muppets had ended, and he wanted to give his friends these troupe of puppeteers. You know, there's not a lot of work for puppeteers out there. In order to sort of keep work going, he decided to create Fraggle Rock. So he turned his attention to Fraggle Rock. Fraggle Rock ran for 5 years on HBO. It was another independently produced program, and is, by my understanding, looking into all the sort of the themes of the different shows, Fraggle Rock is like the DS9 of the franchise of the Muppets. The weird thing that I learned, right, was that apart from these fantastic stories about purpose and work and what have you, with Fraggle Rock, he wanted to, in his words, create a show which ended wars.
Wow, that's ambitious. That's really ambitious.
It was. Except that in 1989, it was the very first Western show to be shown on Soviet television. And 6 months after that, the Berlin Wall came down. So Jim Henson was like...
Oh. I love it.
So it wasn't Hasselhoff that brought down the wall. It was Jim Henson.
Down at Fraggle Rock.
I love it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I was also shocked, though, man, to realise that Labyrinth was also a critical failure and a box office bomb.
Shut up.
So he was getting...
A stone-cold classic. Yeah. Like, that's, for me, is just... A pinnacle of fairy tale storytelling and filmmaking. It's absolutely amazing.
They just didn't get it. They just didn't know what the fuck was the point of it.
Do you know what was wrong? It was David Bowie being too sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Confused conservative America. He was like going, hang on a second. He's a man, but, oh my God, does sweatpants or whatever he was wearing.
He had a very sticky sock stuffed down his pants to pad him out. That's a fact that I also learned in doing research to this.
I have a fact as well. I know that... David Bowie and Tina Turner actually had the same hairdresser during the making of Labyrinth. That's not a fact. That's a Kevin
actually,
fact. That's
she
a Kevin
she
fact.
Does have the same hair in Beyond Thunderdome, doesn't she?
There you go. That's what I meant by that. Yep. Same stylist. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dark Crystal Labyrinth, they weren't that well received. The Muppet movies themselves, though, were really well received. But there's only been 8 of them. So there's not that many to talk about. Well, how did you feel going back into the back catalogue of the Muppets and sort of...
The funny thing was that was my experience with the Muppets was the Muppet Show. From a very early age, I saw the Muppet Show many times. But the funny thing about it was I don't think I'd ever seen any of the first 3 films from beginning to end in completion. I'd seen bits and pieces of them when it'd be on TV.
Yeah.
So I had never... So it was in the past week... I kind of had that in the last couple of weeks. I've went and watched those first 3 films from beginning to end for the first time. And yeah, it was a blast. It really was a fantastic blast.
Yeah, I had to go back as well because I hadn't seen the first 2 and I hadn't seen Muppets from Space, but I'd seen all the others. And I sort of felt quite confident about sort of my rankings of the films. But after watching the remainder of the films, it changed a lot. Have you ever actually, you've been to the Henson Company, haven't you? Because I remember, was it last year or was it the year before?
Yes.
I had a contact at the Henson Company and I remember saying to you that you should speak to them because they were looking for a writer on a project. So how did you get on with them?
I got on great. The projects we were developing never materialized, so it's not coming out. Dealing with them, I was never over there. I never met them in LA when I was over there. It was all via phone and Zoom and Skype and all that. But it was great to, you know, Lisa's Jim's daughter, isn't Lisa Henson?
Yeah, Lisa.
And she's lovely. But again, it's weird how I suppose when you work in the industry, you kind of have to quickly dissociate the legacy in your head and kind of get down to business of actually trying to work on the project that you're working on and get it going. But then, because if you think too much about what has gone before and what's made that, it can kind of make you like a deer in the headlights.
I can tell you like, that if I had known as much as I know now when I was with them, because I was brought in at one stage to pitch on a project there, and it progressed as those things do, and you know, I got to actually be in the actual Henson company, and
oh right,
I even got like a little fizz geek, you know, the little he's sort of like the little critter creature from Labyrinth. He's the furry orange guy that's got the big mouth.
No, no, fizz geek, you stay here, Dolly.
I got given that. It's up there somewhere. I should pull it down.
No way.
Yeah, they gave that to me.
And how did you get on with them?
It didn't happen as well.
But that's the reality of most projects. This is the thing, is like that for anyone who is not in the industry, the reality is us as screenwriters, we generally spend most of our time working on projects that never actually make it to the big screen or the small screen.
I love it. That's it's so fulfilling and satisfying. It's everything I wished it would be. It's like, oh God, living the dream.
Which, yeah, how did you get on with them?
Okay, I don't know whether this will make the podcast, but I'll tell you.
Right.
So I was brought in to pitch on a sequel to a project that I may have mentioned already. And I really, really enjoyed the process. There's some lovely, lovely, genuinely lovely people there. But my experience was a little bit of bad timing.
Right.
So I pitched on a project that was going one direction. And I did the first round, the second round, the third round, and you know,
that's good if you got that far. That's great.
Yeah, and it was all in a very compressed period of time because I was leaving LA, so it was sort of like they wanted to get it all done in the space of like about a week and a half. Before I left to meet everybody that needed to meet me and what have you, and for me to sort of pitch what I was intending to do or hoping to do or what my ideas and thoughts were, and it was going really, really well.
What did you do, Kevin? What did you do?
I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything this time. I didn't go in and tell Marvel about my love for Superman. I was pitching on a project that was going to be a movie, a movie sequel. And the other co-producers were there, and the director of the project was there. And Lisa Henson, oh God, I don't know if I can tell the story. She was meant to be there, but she was running late. And so, because other people were there, I was informed to just crack on and just tell what my pitch was. But the person who needed to hear it wasn't in the room. So I decided,
Lisa.
Yeah, which was Lisa. Lisa needed to hear it.
Yeah.
So I started telling it. And about halfway through the pitch, Lisa came in to join the meeting. And to basically inform everybody, she just got off the phone with a distributor in order to do the project that I was pitching on as a TV series, not a movie.
Oh my God.
And it was great news that she wanted to share with everybody. And the development person looked over at me and made these eyes of like, I'm sorry. And
Kevin,
I had to continue the pitch. It was like, do you want to start over and tell Lisa what it was? And it was then sort of like everyone's head was elsewhere, and I was pitching about a movie that was never going to happen. The project had immediately just shifted beyond what was planned or what they were thinking about. And and as I said goodbye, as we all left the meeting, everybody else was sort of saying goodbye to each other, and nobody said goodbye to me. I was standing there as everyone was like going, oh, we should call each other next week, or we should do lunch or whatever, or so I'll get on this, and do you want to take something for the kids and all this kind of stuff. And I sort of left.
You sidled out. That is the worst timing.
It is, but I don't want it to feel like I'm bitter or anything, or I don't want to feel like I'm critical. It's just one of those fucking silly things that happen where, because I didn't put that much effort into that. I'd only been thinking about it for a week and a half, but it was just one of those things where in the moment I was like, this is so David Brent-esque. Like, this is just I'm pitching on a project that's already just been killed in the room in front of me.
Right. As you're in mid-performance, you're on the stage, you are in the middle of your... Someone comes on and they switch the lights on and they go, everyone, take that or outside. And you're like, what? And the one person stays to listen to you. Oh, Kevin, I feel so bad for you.
And the funny thing was, is that the other people in the room knew it as well. But Lisa was so excited to share the good news that she was just not aware that I was also there. It was like an intern had slipped into the room. And there was nothing malicious about it. There was nothing. It was just sort of this thing of like extremely busy, just gotten off the phone. That was the reason she was late. And the great news was XYZ. And I was like, oh.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I tell you what, Will, after that, I'm feeling a little queasy.
Oh, what?
I'll tell you what it is, Will. I came onto this nervous about doing this episode because it's just the two of us. Right. And I was like, can we actually do an episode by ourselves again? And I don't know if it's that or it's the fact that I had a sandwich on a plane that was on a tray table that was covered in shite. And my stomach is...
Call back
to the Halloween commentary.
And
if you can just give me a second, if I don't excuse myself now, I can never come back. So,
well, listen, Kevin, I don't want you defecating in front of me.
Stop.
Just go now, right?
Oh my God.
Oh Jesus.
Christ, such a professional outfit.
I'm enjoying it, Will. I swear to God, I'm enjoying it. Just the two of us. This is original flavor, best bits. But just give me like about 5 minutes. I just need to basically lose a stone. So I'll.
I'm not pausing the recording.
Don't worry, I'll hold the fort. Don't worry, you just go.
Oh my God,
he's gone.
Fuck him. He'll be gone half an hour. I'm telling you now, Will.
What can I do?
What do you want to do?
Jeez, I'll just call someone.
Do that.
Hold on now.
What kind of phone number is this?
Right. Okay.
Reverse the charges on that.
Okay, right. Hopefully he's in now. Right. It's ringing.
Hello?
Hello, Liam. It's Will here.
Oh, Will. How's it going? How are you?
Oh, Liam, I'm in a bit of bother. We're doing an episode on Best Muppet Scene. And I really didn't know which way to go. So I thought maybe you might be able to help me out. Do you have any interest in the Muppets?
Oh, you have called the right person, Will.
Thank God. Like... Literally, I didn't even start at A. I just went to L and I went, Liam, I'll just try him. Literally, I'm so glad that you just happened to be the right person to randomly call in my phone book from my contact list. And you're the guy I should have called. Well, first of all, what I'm going to do is I just want to introduce, because we actually, some people are going to be listening to this as well. This is going to go out in the podcast, Liam. I should have told you I'm recording right now.
That's okay.
Everyone, who I'm speaking to is Liam Geraghty. And Liam Geraghty is a kind of super audio podcast producer who has done multiple successful podcasts, including the likes of Meet Your Maker, which is a podcast in which he interviews the people who make the things we love. It's a wonderful podcast, and you know you should listen to it because you've done ones on Don Bluth, for instance, which we've covered in an episode this season. We've talked about animation with Tom Moore. So Liam, you're the perfect guest because not only that, but you're a super Muppets fan. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, I can't. I can't convey to you how much I'm obsessed with the Muppets. This might sum it up. A couple of years ago, the Muppets came over to the O2 in London, and they performed three nights. In three nights only, and I went over and I seen two of those nights.
Wow.
I was going to stretch it to the three, but I thought maybe it was, I don't know, it was expensive also.
Do you what's your earliest memory of the Muppets? Is that something you could pull?
One other thing I remember is that the Muppet Show used to be on a channel we didn't have. So I used to run up to a neighbor up the road who had Video Plus. Do you remember Video Plus?
Oh, is this something where you can code it into your video recorder or something like that?
Yeah. Exactly.
I still don't know how that works.
When you had the TV guide, it would have a little number beside the listing.
Yeah.
And so I would run up to my neighbor and with a blank VHS, and I'd be like, please, please, can you set your Video Plus to record the Muppet Show for me?
Brilliant.
But yeah, no, I was, it was, they were always kind of like there around. I was obsessed with them since I was a kid. There was a big one thing that particularly stands out to me is there was an exhibition that actually came to Dublin, Kilmainham Jail, in I think it was 1989 or 1990, and it was called Muppets, Monsters and Mayhem. Okay. And they basically just brought a whole load of Muppets and Jim Henson creatures from like Labyrinth and Dark Crystal and Fraggle Rock, and they had all the puppets there. And I just remember two vivid ones. I remember the Gorg from Fraggle Rock. They were like the big guys who they used to steal the radishes from. And then the kind of, I don't know this guy's name, he's from the Labyrinth. Do you remember these kind of goats that were playing cards and they had a riddle that Sarah had to like answer? Anyway.
Labyrinth. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I know the ones you're on. Yeah, they've got, and they're upside down.
Yes, and it's just before she falls down into the tunnel of hands. Yeah. But yeah, they had that, and I just remember seeing those. It was just, my mind was blown. Like, I would have only been about, I don't know, 8
That's
at the time.
Exactly what I was going to ask you there. I think one of the commonalities through a lot of these interviews and even chats with between myself and Kevin and other guests we've had on is always so many of us have had those like formative moments where we meet in person are kind of like idols, or we have that connection with something when it really makes our brain explode in some way, and it like forms the wiring of how our of the things we love for the rest of our lives in some weird way. And it sounds like that happened to you.
Oh, 100%. I have just been obsessed. I can't even, hopefully I'm conveying it a bit, but I honestly feel like I can't convey how much obsessed I was and am with the Muppets throughout my entire life. Like when I was a kid, again, I would have only been about 10 or 11. I wrote them a letter. They sent back a photocopied article all about Jim Henson from The New Yorker, and they just photocopied it from The New Yorker.
Wow.
And they'd included two glossy photographs, one black and white glossy photographs, one of Kermit and one of Fozzie Bear, which years later I would bump into Frank Oz, who obviously performed Fozzie Bear. He was over, I got him to sign it, and he was over for, what was that film he did? Death at a Funeral. Do you remember that one? Yes, it's a
little
film, really good.
Yeah.
So just my life is just permeates Muppets.
What for you would be your favorite Muppets scenes and why?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, there's been 8 Muppet movies. There's been 8 cinematic. There's been plenty of TV movies or whatever, but there's been 8 cinema releases. So if we I'll run down through them. Well, obviously, the first one was the Muppet movie. That was in 1979.
For anyone who has ever dreamed of fame and fortune at the end of the rainbow, this is one of the greatest success stories of all time, proving once and for all that anyone can make it, no matter how young, no matter how green.
The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
The thing that was love about that is that, even though The Muppet Show had been really successful as a TV show, it was one of the most successful TV show at the time in the world, when they wanted to make a movie, there was a lot of doubters. And it was kind of similar, I think, to maybe what Walt Disney had experienced with Snow White, where people were like, how is an animated film going to sustain an hour and a half? And people were the same. They were like, how are the Muppets going to work in the, and they're going to be out in the real world, also. We've only ever seen them in the studio with lighting, and how is that going to work? But I just love that the opening sequence is a helicopter shot over a swamp, a real swamp, and it's slowly coming into Kermit the Frog, who's just sitting on a log out in nature in the middle of this big bayou. And I just thought that was such a great two fingers up to anyone who thought that this was not going to work in the real world, because it was just totally magical. How is Kermit the Frog in the middle of this log? And apparently, Jim Henson was just in a big container, underneath, cramped.
No way.
Yeah. I'd spent hours, there. Yeah, amazing. But so I think the magic of the very first Muppet movie is really just seeing the Muppets out in the real world, and you've probably seen, and anyone listening is probably seen, if you haven't, definitely look it up. But there's on YouTube, you can see, it's about a 10, 15 minute footage footage of like Jim Henson, Frank Oz, and I think it was James Frawley, the director, just going around like just shooting the Muppets out in the countryside just for lighting to see how they work. But they're just riffing. They're just like, you know, they're just pure, just like, you know, improvising. And it is so funny. I'll send you the link anyway, and people can look it up.
That's a great looking tree.
Yeah, look at that bark. Feel that. That's real bark. That's real tree.
Mm-hmm.
Great to be out here, huh?
Yep.
A bear in his natural habitat.
Yeah, well, but Fuzzy, see, the thing of it is, though, well, you know, you're not a real bear. I mean, you're not a real natural bear. Well, I mean, you're talking about a bear in his natural habitat.
Yeah. Well, me and my natural...
The cows back there.
Yeah.
Now, those cows, those are real cows. I mean, those are cows that are out here. They eat grass. They, you know, they give milk. Those are cows.
Well, I don't give milk, but I'm a bear.
No. But a real bear is sort of a thing with... He's got sharp teeth and he...
Now, wait a second.
Do you have sharp teeth?
I don't have teeth.
No. I mean, do you hibernate?
Only with friends.
So that was my favorite scene from that first Muppet movie as well, as that, you know, it's so impressive. It draws you into that world, and that's amazing. I didn't realize that's an amazing bit of trivia about Jim Henson being stuck under the, you know.
Yeah, and I only read that like in one of the, I'm trying to think. Oh, Jim Henson, it's an amazing book. Jim Henson, The Works.
Right.
If you want to find out about how all this stuff was done. But yeah, I never thought about it before, you know, just like,
yeah.
Like you say, it's just so, you're just so in it, you know, absorbed in it,
yeah.
That I never like went, oh, like how are they actually doing this?
Wow. Or,
you know, when I was a kid. But yeah, no, it was a fantastic first movie for them.
So what would be some of your other picks for best
Muppet scene? So then the next movie they did in 81, that was The Great Muppet Caper.
This is the most fabulous diamond of them all, the legendary baseball diamond. And this would be the most sensational heist of the century if it weren't for...
Announcing The Great Muppet Caper.
It's a new Muppet movie.
With what? Your superstar.
Say cheese.
So while the Muppet movie was, you know, it was in America, it was quite an American kind of movie. And I know they're American characters, but The Great Muppet Caper was set in London.
Mm-hmm.
And so like has a very kind of English thing running through it. And here's some trivia that probably most people know, I guess, but like the Muppet Show itself was all filmed in England because none of the American networks wanted it. And it was a producer, Lord Lou Grade, I think, who was basically like, I'll give you the money to make it, but you have to make it in England.
Wow.
So all the crew on the Muppet Show TV series, they were all British.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was filmed in Elstree Studios, I'm pretty sure. And so The Great Muppet Caper sees like kind of Kermit and Fozzie and Gonzo, they're in roles this time, whereas the first one it was supposed to be the actual Muppets and how they got together.
Yeah.
The Great Muppet Caper was them playing parts as reporters.
Yeah, for this newspaper. I love it. Yeah, it's so much fun.
And so like so knowing like all the, you know, it's so meta, and it's, you know, it's all done, delivered with a wink, you know. The opening again, another great opening scene is Fozzie, Gonzo and Kermit, and they're in a big hot air balloon in the sky, and Fozzie's like, you know, why are we up here, like, well, you know, why hasn't the movie started? And Kermit's like, oh well, we have to wait for the credits to, you know, to go, you know. And Fozzie's like, but nobody reads them anyway, you know. And then there's a credit for like director of photography, and the letters ASC, you know, come up after the name, and Fozzie's like, what does ASC stand for? You know, I just love that kind of stuff. But yeah, Muppet Caper, oh, there's so many great scenes in the Great Muppet Caper. It took all that like stuff that like just blew your mind. For example, in the Muppet movie, you had Kermit riding a bike, right?
Oh, I love that shot.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But then in the Great Muppet Caper, we have all the Muppets riding a bike. They're going through a park, and it's just like how is this happening?
You know, how did they do that? I've no idea, because they're in tandem, like, you know, there's three rows of them. They have a helicopter shot, so it's like, yeah, it's how do they do that? I just don't know.
I was reading again in that book about it was actually done with marionettes. You would never have believed it, but it was actually done with a combination of, you know, so the Muppets were kind of there. They kind of, you know, they were able to kind of move their heads and stuff, you know, electronically, but to keep them up and to kind of move them was done with marionettes.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. And then, you know, you have, there's a fantastic Busby Berkeley kind of dance number, you know, with Miss Piggy and all these, you know, guys in tails and top hats and Miss Piggy tap dancing. And then you have, like, there's another number with her, kind of a water ballet kind of, you know, old Hollywood kind of thing with Kermit and James. I'm going to get to James Grogan, wasn't it?
Midnight Run, James Grogan, isn't it? James.
That guy anyway. And so they're, you know, singing about the love interest and Miss Piggy is underwater, you know, swimming around. It's mind-blowing. And also, I suppose, we you know, like the first movie, it's just full of great cameos, you know.
But I think they're utilized better in that film. I feel like they're, like the John Cleese bit is... that's a funny... There are funny gags that exist unto themselves, whereas in the first film, it's kind of like, oh my God, it's Dom DeLuise. And it's just like, what's the joke?
Yeah.
It's Dom DeLuise. That's the joke. Whereas this is like, they're contained gags. They're playing characters in a scene. And I think it works so much better in that second one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, and, you know, the one that sticks out in my mind, aside from the John Cleese one, was where Miss Piggy throws Peter Ustinov out of a truck. And he lands in the trash. And then Oscar the Grouch comes out. And then he's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, a cameo. And he's like, yeah, me too.
Couldn't you make an exception for little old moi?
Not even for little old food.
Pretty please?
No.
I've tried to be nice.
Oh.
Hey, what's all the racket?
What are you doing here?
A very brief cameo.
Me too.
That's great.
Just, it's fantastic. But yeah, no, so the Great Muppet Caper, I know at the end you'll probably ask me, like, what was my favorite? And the Great Muppet Caper is probably close. I couldn't pick one, I don't think, but the Muppet Caper is right up there for me. And then after that, we had the Muppets Take Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
In 84.
Yeah.
At last, a movie with something for everyone. If you're a big star or a small fry, if you're a freak of nature or just a nature freak, if you're into violence or terror is your thing, if you're a hopeless romantic or a desperate criminal, TriStar Pictures presents a motion picture experience that will leave you breathless. The Muppets Take Manhattan, rated G.
Caper was directed by Jim Henson, wasn't it? That was actually the only feature directed by Jim Henson. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, which is... Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, which is, you know, it's kind of odd. Like, I think for the Muppet movie, he wasn't, you know, it was the first movie, he wasn't confident enough to, you know, like, wanted to focus on making sure the puppeteering and everything was right. So brought in James Frawley, who had done a lot of the Monkees TV show. That's what he would have been known for. Yeah, then great Caper, Great Muppet Caper was Jim Henson, and then Frank Oz was The Muppets Take Manhattan, his first movie of his illustrious career.
Yeah, amazing that, you know, when I saw his name appear, I was like going, oh my god, he directed this. And and you could immediately tell he was it's a filmmaker wanting to make he wanted to make a film with this. It really was clear from the off.
Yeah, and I could be wrong on the dates here, but I think The Dark Crystal might have even come in between, which Henson and Oz directed together.
Yeah, Podbot will help us out there. Podbot, when did The Dark Crystal come out?
The Dark Crystal was released in 1982. Also, The Great Muppet Caper starred Charles Grodin, not James Grodin.
Thanks, Podbot.
You're welcome.
There we go. She's so handy there. She's so handy that way.
But so yeah, the Muppets Take Manhattan is just a cracking kind of like 80s movie of the Muppets playing themselves, but also, you know, it's almost like an alternate kind of story of them trying to put on a show on Broadway and get it, you know, and same wonderful cameos, the cameo with Miss Piggy and
Joan Rivers.
Come to me. Hold on. Joan Rivers. God, how did I forget Joan Rivers? Yeah, sorry. That, you know, that's great. But yeah, that was just, it's just a really fun movie. In terms of like particular amazing sequences, there's a cafe where Miss Piggy works, and the rats all work there in the kitchen. And there's a whole sequence of them basically making breakfast. And it's just like mind-blowing, like it's just the rats like just hopping up on counters and pouring like pancake mix and skating across the cookers, and it's just a, technically it's just an amazing thing. So like you were saying earlier on, it's just like it just holds up so well. They did it so well at the time. It just, you know, it looks so good still.
Oh, customer complain, they say they know like rats for waiters, but it's okay, I make them cook.
Hey, Pete, here you go. 2 zeros on a trampoline with a side of Joan of Arc.
Oh, yeah! Ba-doop, deep, deep, doop, 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 ba-doop, ba-doop, ba-doop.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I really, really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. And then I mean that was the three that, you know, then after that Jim Henson passed away in I think 1990. And so the first film after that was everybody's favorite, probably The Christmas Carol, in 92, and that was directed by his son Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Bah, humbug.
He was the greediest man alive.
It's Ebenezer Scrooge.
Until the night he met someone extraordinary.
Hello.
And that's, I mean, you know, it's, you know, it's a brilliant film. You know, it's obviously, you know, we all know it's a classic, you know, and they did a really good job, you know, considering
it's one of my favorite adaptations of A Christmas Carol. Like, you know, even up there with David Lean's version, I just think it's a wonderful adaptation of that story.
Yeah. Oh,
and Michael Caine is amazing.
Absolutely. Like, and that, what a stroke of genius of like getting, you know, bringing Michael Caine on. But again, it's that kind of, it's that British thing. Like the early episodes of The Muppet Show, like a lot of the guests were British. Like Bruce Forsyth was like one of the first guests on The Muppet Show.
Wow.
Because they weren't famous enough yet to be attracting like the bigger American stars.
And the American audiences were going like, you know, what? who's this guy with the chin? Who's this? This is Bruce guy with a chin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Christmas Carol. Then, yeah, after that, I mean, you know, it's Treasure Island.
Centuries ago, a legendary treasure was buried on a remote island. And there's only one living soul daring enough to find it.
Hello, everyone.
Captain Abraham Smollett is taking command.
This voyage has begun.
To wherever the wind may take us.
Hurry, Rizzo!
I'm going as fast as I can.
I think they were kind of, I think they were trying to piggyback, if you'll excuse the pun, of, you know, Christmas Carol. They were like, oh, you know what? Our adaptation of this classic really worked out. Let's do another one.
Yeah.
And while I enjoy Treasure Island, it wasn't quite the success, I think, that they'd probably hoped it would be. Mm-hmm. But has some wonderful, you know, sequences in it. Tim Curry is fantastic in it as Long John Silver. And it's got a great musical number, Cabin Fever, that's very fun. And yeah, after that, then it was 1999. I feel like a Muppets encyclopedia now.
No, this is good. This is great homework for me as well when I go back talking to Kevin. It's fantastic.
there was Muppets from Space, was the next one.
Yeah.
Welcome to a house where the normal routine...
Good morning, everyone.
The raspberry flopovers will be out in a moment.
...is anything but...
The kitchen is closed.
The Muppets are back.
She's our bread.
They all had their place in the world. Except for Gonzo.
I've always wondered where I came from, who I am.
Hey, Gonzo, don't you think you ought to take a little break? You're starting to freak out the neighbors.
Now, he's about to find out he's not alone.
I know where I come from!
And that was directed by Tim Hill. He was like an animation director. He did some Kablam, I think it was called.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day. I think I watched it when I was growing up. But Muppets from Space is like, I enjoyed it. Again, it was kind of, it was all about Gonzo, where it's Gonzo from, and the revelation being that, oh, Gonzo's actually an alien.
Cool.
but it all centered around Gonzo, which was a nice, I thought it was a nice kind of thing to do, like to pick one Muppet and kind of focus on them, and it's not Kermit or Piggy kind of thing, and again full of cameos, and yeah, just it had a great soundtrack as well. It was all kind of like funk,
right,
you know, that they brought in, so it was an interesting take, you know, on the Muppets, I thought.
Yeah.
And then we didn't have a Muppet movie for another 10 years.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, until they came back with The Muppets in 2011 with James Bobin's movie.
We're trying to get the old gang back together again.
We haven't done this in a long time.
Your fans never left you. The world hasn't forgotten.
Sure, it's impossible, but we've got to try. It's time to play the music.
It's time to light the lights.
It's time to meet the Muppets.
Yes! Come on, guys, let's go!
You know, the two latest Muppet movies, right? The Muppets and Muppets Most Wanted, both directed by James Bobin. And they're both fun, you know, movies. But I suppose the thing now, and this is what I'm wrestling with, Will.
Yes,
is that, like, you know, I loved the Muppets, the Muppet Show and the original, you know, performers and everything. And I... You know, I followed everything the Muppets did. Like, you have no idea. Like, every crappy TV movie they made, every awful special. Like, after Henson passed away, they were mismanaged, I think, you know, to an extent.
Okay.
Or not, maybe not mismanaged, but I don't know. The writing wasn't as good. The performers, you know, changed performers who maybe weren't as strong. And it comes down to, actually, there was an interview with Frank Oz in The Guardian a couple of weeks back. Did you get to read
this?
Oh,
yes. But you can tell me what he was saying. He
said anyone can do the voice, right?
Right.
He said it's not the voice. The voice isn't the character. He said it's the soul is the word he used. And actually, Louise Gold used that word as well when I was talking to her. And I think, yeah, it's like, when we think about, like, they almost are different from animated characters or voice actors replacing, you know, animated characters, because these Jim Henson was Kermit and Frank Oz was Fuzzy Bear, you know what I mean? They really did. It really was part of them. And they were, and as performers, they were really funny. Like, they used to go on the late night talk shows with Johnny Carson and everything, and they would be legitimately hilarious.
They were incredible improvisers.
Yeah, 100%. And the other key thing was that, when you look at those, is that they were never hit. The performer was never hidden. It was just Jim Henson sitting on the couch with Kermit on his arm. He was like, you don't need to hide, in the way now, if Kermit appears on something, he's, you know, the puppeteer is built into the couch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
you know, and it's been so hard for me to work out my feelings on the Muppets now, because I love the Muppets, but, like, just on the new stuff, it's hard, because, like, you love these characters and they're continuing on, but I don't know, I feel like it's almost like a Simpsons thing. You really enjoy all the old Simpsons and the characters, but, like, when I watch a new episode of the Simpsons, I don't connect to these characters in the way I do it from the older ones. And that's not, you know, I'm not moaning about, like, you know, it's fine, people can watch them and enjoy them now, and that's great, because, you know, maybe to some people of a certain age, these new Muppets are their Muppets. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. What you said is absolutely right. That essence of the original voice has changed, and the original voice isn't there anymore. That's guiding them. And, you know, that comparison to the Simpsons writer room is so right, because we had the likes of Conan O'Brien and we had the likes of all this Jim Reardon and all these amazing comedy writers that were in the, you know, there for those first 10 seasons of The Simpsons, and it shows in the quality of the stories. Whereas, yeah, what you're saying about the Muppets is, yeah, if those performers are gone, then, you know, I love that. You're just replacing it with someone who's an imitator and not, you know, able to.
Yeah. And like, I mean, in the episode of Meet Your Maker that I had Louise Gold on, she was really nice about it, I thought, in that she said, you know, listen, the performers now, she said, are brilliant. They're better puppeteers than we ever were. She said, mm-hmm. they're fantastic. They're great. But their portrayals of the character is different. And she said, that's not a bad thing. Which is that it's just different. Now, having said that, having said all that, Will, there is. I don't know if you've seen Disney Plus have a trailer for a Muppet Halloween special.
I didn't know this.
Muppets Haunted House, okay. Mansion. Muppets Haunted Mansion after the attraction in Disneyland, and the trailer. Like, looks amazing. It's a TV kind of special for Disney Plus, and it looks amazing. Like,
wow.
I'd never thought to put like the Muppets, even though we had obviously the Marley, Jacob and Marley in Christmas Carol were fantastic ghost Muppets. A combination of Muppets and Halloween seems to be like a match made in heaven.
Oh man, it looks so good.
Welcome to the home of fear and fright, where not all guests survive the night. The lucky souls will live to tell, and those who don't. Rotten.
What's the matter with you? You can't say that. This is a family show.
What are you doing?
Welcome, foolish Muppets,
to tonight's very special Halloween challenge.
We just have to survive the night in this haunted mansion.
After we're finished, this is going to be the first thing I look up. Seriously. Wow, I didn't even know that was on the horizon. So if I had to pin you down, what is your favorite Muppet scene? You know, have you already given it to me, or have you been holding back?
My favorite Muppet scene. I'm not going to claim this is my favorite scene, but we have just very briefly mention.
Oh, please.
Totally forgot. Probably one of the most amazing sequences in The Muppets Take Manhattan is when Piggy and Kermit are imagining what it would have been like if they had grown up together. And we have this Muppet baby sequence.
Yes! Yes! yes!
And so you have this amazing, adorable Muppet babies for the first time. And that was the sequence that people went nuts for. And then they were like, oh yeah, let's make an animated series about the Muppet babies.
Oh, Liam, you were so... I actually, when I was watching that, I went, oh my God, this is amazing with the Muppet babies. So that the origin of the Muppet babies is in Muppets Take Manhattan. And it is an amazing... They're so adorable. They're so cute. Everything about it is just amazing. I wish they had just done a Muppet baby. Obviously, it's very difficult and expensive to do that. Yeah, but it was brilliant. Yeah. It's a brilliant sequence.
No matter what life may bring, no matter what I may do, be sure of one special thing. I'm gonna always be loving
It was brilliant. And then obviously on the show, the TV show was great. And actually, you know what? The show now, they've rebooted it and it's kind of CGI, whatever. And it's actually quite good. I mean, it's aimed at young kids, you know, so, you know, but like it's actually a really smart kind of show, and they bring in all the old characters, and it's if you're a diehard Muppet fan, I'd recommend the new Muppet Babies.
So I'm going to do it for you. Your favorite Muppet sequence is the Muppet Baby sequence from Muppets Take Manhattan. Whether you like it or not, it is. No, listen, I truly appreciate you you know, taking the time and answering my random phone call. And being so prepared. Who knew that you would be so prepared to answer my questions?
No, listen. I'm, like I said, anyone ever wants to ring me and talk about Muppets, I will burn your ear off.
It's 086 25 00 by Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. If we were in America, it'd be like 1800 Muppets.
Wonderful. Liam, I've taken up so much of your time already. I've got I've got to jump back in and tell Kevin all about the cool stuff you've just after telling me. And I'm going to claim it as my own information and say, Kevin, I know all these things about the most, but no, I really appreciate you giving your time and your experience. And I loved hearing all about your own adventures, and it's brilliant. Liam, where can people find you on social media and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can find me on Twitter as @Liam_Geraghty. And actually, something I say to people all the time is when I somehow, you know, sometimes if I do a tweet that like gets lots of likes or something, I'm like, oh, these people have no idea that it's 90% Muppet content like on my feed. You know, they're going to be in for a rude awakening.
I would expect no less. Listen, I really appreciate you coming on and helping us out, Liam. Thanks so much.
No worries. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Good luck.
That was great.
Thank God I got there. It was great to talk to Liam there now, because
here he's back.
Oh no, here he is, here he is. Shh. Right.
Say nothing. Look at the state of him.
Okay, right. Kevin, how are you? How are the bowels?
Oh, I feel so much better after that. I can't tell you. Oh my God.
Kevin, you actually look like you lost.
I've hit my goal weight, so that's something anyway. Oh God, and you know, listen, I'm really enjoying it because, you know, just the two of us, this is the way it's meant to be, you know, just us on the podcast,
yeah,
just chatting shit, telling stories, things that we shouldn't include in a professional podcast. I'm loving it, but God, where was I?
And it's so great not to have guests. It's been wonderful. Just you and me, no guests. And
I've really enjoyed having guests on the show, but for this episode, it feels great to just be ourselves and just not have to worry about, you know,
accommodate another person.
Exactly. I mean, I don't have the energy for it when I'm exhausted.
Well, funny you say that now, because, you know, I had a long think about it when you were away, and I had to think about like some of my favorite scenes from Muppet films and stuff like that. And
oh my God, you did research. I'm thrilled.
I've done a lot of research. Like Dana Gould was a Muppeteer of Gonzo, and I learned an amazing thing about Frank Oz. You know, did you hear about Frank Oz's recent interview where he talked about when Disney took over, you know, the Muppets, he felt the soul was gone out of the characters because they were kind of getting rid of the puppeteers.
Well, did you know that before Jim Henson died, he was getting exhausted, as I said, after the critical drubbing of Dark Crystal and Labyrinth? He was really feeling like he was missing the mark. And on top of that, he was doing a number of TV shows to sort of keep the Muppets in pop culture. One of them was the Jim Henson Story Hour, which was a sort of an anthology show that was hosted by John Hurt.
When people told themselves their past with stories, explained their present with stories, foretold the future with stories, the best place by the fire was kept for the storyteller.
I love that.
See, you loved it, but nobody saw it. So it was bombing in the ratings. It was the lowest rated Henson project out there at that time in the mid 80s. And also he did the Jim Henson Hour that was sort of like an MTV-ish kind of reboot of the variety shows that the Muppets were doing. Was including animation and digital effects and what have you, and it was four different concepts in one, and it was really messy and convoluted, and it wasn't working.
Good evening and welcome to our show.
Woof.
Wait a second, you're not the lion.
No, I'm the dog. I work with the storyteller.
And that got pulled off the air, and it was one of the few times where something that they'd worked on was cancelled on them.
Jesus.
So Jim Henson thought, I need to sort of streamline the process.
Yeah.
Because everything was privately owned. At one stage, he took his own money by merchandising the Muppet Babies and things like that. That he was able to buy back the rights to all of his projects.
Yeah.
So he bought back all the rights to the Muppet movie, to The Great Caper, to Dark Crystal, and those were $15 million and $14 million and what have
Jesus.
You. It was all his own money. So he brought in Disney. And Disney at that time weren't the powerhouse that they are now. They were still huge, but they needed...
This is the early 90s.
Yeah, the early 90s, late 89, 90.
Okay.
And Eisner was a part of that, and also Katzenberg. And they wanted to sort of to bring in a beloved property into the Disney fold and sort of give them back relevance.
Okay.
Because the Muppets were still, as I said, there was 26 specials on TV. They were hugely popular still.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a really difficult time sort of doing a deal with the Disney crowd, especially with Katzenberg, who was aggressive and rude and obnoxious. You know, the Disney company also wanted to take ownership of Sesame Street, and he would not let them have Sesame Street. He felt that they needed their independence. They needed to be a publicly owned PBS, entity, which was just purely about educating children. It was not something that could be exploited like the way that the Muppets could be, for instance. And then he died, and they didn't close that deal. So for 10 years, Disney and the Henson Company, their team of lawyers, were negotiating, and it was a really fractious 10 years of negotiations.
Yeah. I didn't know any
of
that.
Which is why you don't have a lot of the Muppet content on Disney Plus at the moment.
Yeah.
You've got some of it, but not all of it.
So can I ask you, is that original Muppet Show, is that available on Disney Plus? Because I actually didn't, I'd love to watch that. Is it not there?
There's 120 episodes in total, but I think they're missing several episodes per season.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what the reasons are for those omissions, because it'll skip, like, it could be music rights, it could be, it's more than likely music rights, but yeah, you don't have the complete collection.
Can I talk about my favourite, there's two things I want to talk about my favourite Muppets scene, right? But there, my favourite Muppet film, which I think is still my favourite Muppet film going into it and now coming out of it, is Muppets Christmas Carol.
Coming soon on video cassette, Walt Disney Pictures presents a Jim Henson production of a classic Christmas tale.
Ah, humbug.
He's the world's greediest man.
It's Ebenezer Scrooge.
Until the magical night he meets someone extraordinary.
Hello.
The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Drink to Mr. Scrooge, even though he is stingy and badly dressed.
Humbug.
There goes Mr. Humbug. There goes Mr. Grin.
Do you think it's safe for us to be up here?
If they gave a prize for being me, the winner would be him.
Yes, Mr. Cratchit.
If you please, Mr. Scrooge, the bookkeeping staff would like to have an extra shovel full of coal for the fire.
Our assets are frozen.
How would the bookkeepers like to be suddenly
unemployed?
Heatwave! Oi! This is my island in the sun.
It's Charles Dickens' classic tale. As only the Muppets can tell it.
It's good to be heckling again.
It's good to be doing anything again.
Stuffed with holiday warmth and cheer.
Just a season to be jolly and joyous.
This is the movie to see, to share, to cherish with someone you love.
Thank you for making me a part of this.
Coming to video cassette this fall, it's the Muppet Christmas Carol.
God bless us, everyone.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, I just got probably spoiling everything. But it's, after rewatching the other films, it's, you know, it's been challenged. But there's one of my favourite scenes from Muppet's Christmas Carol has actually been cut.
This is a very short episode. I mean, I've just come back to the thought. I'm already getting into it.
I know. I'm sorry, okay. Kevin. I just think we need to be a little bit more brief. A couple of our episodes were really long.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I said, let's
a half hour episode. Cut to the chase. I'm for it.
Cut to the chase, yeah, really. Okay. But
all right, so we've skipped over ranking the films. We're straight into favorite scene in a Muppet movie.
Well, for me,
and your pick,
my pick of favorite Muppet movie, like everyone else's, probably is Muppet's Christmas Carol. But one of my favorite scenes, I've got two favorite scenes, right? One of those scenes was cut by Jeffrey Katzenberg, which I've heard a lot of people say, what are you talking about? There's a musical number right in the middle of that film that actually doesn't feature.
This is the Berenstain Bears moment of the Muppets, where some people remember this scene being in the film, and some people, like myself, had no idea that this scene existed.
This is the Love Is Gone musical number. That's what it is.
Yeah, which I only learned about last year when they sort of rediscovered the actual, was it the master, the original master of the film, where they could include it now in high definition in the film.
It's gas because my first encounter with Muppets Christmas Carol was watching it at Christmas time on terrestrial RTV. I recorded it. So I'd watched that film many times with that scene in it. So it was released theatrically with that scene in it, but it was post-fact that Jeffrey Katzenberg thought it was this scene. The scene I'm talking about is basically when young Ebenezer Scrooge is going over his past life and he comes to it. There's a moment where he abandons the love of his life and there's a musical number and a song called The Love Is Gone. And it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, it's where she is saying that whatever love we had together, that love is gone.
Yeah.
Another year before our wedding, Ebenezer.
But it can't be helped, Belle. How could we marry now? There's not even enough for a decent home. The investments haven't grown as they should.
So you said last year.
Business continues to be poor.
You're a partner in your own firm now.
Barely clearing expenses.
You said the partnership was the goal.
This is for you. I love you, Belle.
You did once.
And it's pivotal for the arc of that entire film because it is a low. It is you see the moment where he consciously gives up love, the character of Ebenezer Scrooge. And once that scene is taken out of the film, I really think that film loses some of its, not that it's hard, but it loses some of its edge and its darkness. And it's not even dark. It's just like, it's a bit more safe. And
it's a pivotal moment in telling his story.
Absolutely.
And to take it out.
And
you're not telling the full story.
It was Katzenberg. It was Jeffrey Katzenberg took it out because he thought it was too heavy and a bit too heavy for kid audiences. Which is like, hang on a second. No, it's not.
The love is gone. The love is gone. The sweetest dream that you have ever known. The love is gone. I wish you well, but I must leave you now alone.
The most interesting thing for me is the transition. And there is a very beautiful song during which it happens.
Oh, Rizzo.
That's my second kind of favorite scene. I'm going to bring it up because I think it's important that people know that scene is out there.
Okay.
But my favorite scene is, like in a lot of the Muppet movies, the opening scene, which introduces us to the world in which is where we see all of the Muppets. And it's the moment where we have Gonzo, who's playing the part of the
and
narrator.
Rizzo the Rat.
With Rizzo the Rat. Gonzo's playing Charles Dickens, and you've Rizzo the Rat, and they're...
Just not to interrupt you, but there's a lovely, lovely moment that most people overlook between Rizzo and Gonzo in The Muppet Christmas Carol. And they sort of have this hectoring back and forth relationship.
Yeah.
Where they're like two little buddy characters. But they have an argument, and Rizzo, at the end of the argument, to show his affection for Gonzo, he kisses him on the nose.
Ah, yeah.
It's a lovely little moment.
It's lovely.
It's so sweet.
And you know that's improvisation. That's these, that's a moment that just happened on camera. Like, he just went, did it. It's beautiful, like. And I love that scene because it draws you into this cozy, wonderful world where you see Muppets popping out of everywhere and on various scales, like regular sized Muppets, but then you see teeny tiny little mice Muppets and it's so inviting and cozy and warm, and it's a kind of a consistent thing in all the Muppet movies.
When a cold wind blows, it chills you to the bone.
But there's nothing in nature that freezes your heart like years of being alone.
It paints you with indifference like a lady paints with rouge.
And the worst of the worst,
the most hated and cursed,
is the one that we call Scrooge.
Unkind as any,
and the wrath of many,
this is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, there goes Mr. Humbug, there goes Mr. Grimm.
you go back to the musical episode, it is the table setter song.
Yeah.
It's the song which establishes this is the world, this is, you know, where the story takes place, and this is the vibe of the world as we know it. It's lovely. It's such... Muppet's Christmas Carol, for me, I think, is a great film. Mm-hmm. Point blank. It's just a great film. But my favourite Muppet film isn't Muppet Christmas Carol.
Whatever.
Shut up. You've changed.
I have.
You've changed.
Here's the thing that I have, right? I think the best Muppet movies are the ones that have a Henson involved.
Right.
So the ones that are directed by Jim Henson or the ones that are directed by Brian Henson. Mm-hmm. So Brian Henson did Muppet Christmas Carol. Brian Henson's the son of Jim Henson. And he also did Muppet Treasure Island, which is another cracking little comedy.
Yeah.
It's really well done, and it's unique in that the Muppets are playing different characters to themselves, whereas the other Muppet movies, they're playing themselves. Kermit is playing Kermit, Miss Piggy's playing Miss Piggy. But the only Muppet movie that Jim Henson directed is the one that I love the most out of all the Muppet films, and it's their second film, and it's the one that was a contractual obligation by Universal.
Okay.
And the funny thing is, for a film that is a contractual obligation, it really feels like everybody involved is having a blast. And I got to tell you, I was watching it for the first time just a couple of nights ago, and I had to stop the film at one moment because I couldn't stop laughing at the moment when Kermit is about to go on his date with Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
And Fozzie wants to go along with him, and they start having a song and dance number.
Have I got style? Have I got taste? On someone else, I swear, this savoir faire would be such a waste. Come toss me my top hat,
yes, sir.
And Kermit is so excited about going on this date that the way that the puppeteers worked Kermit, where he twirls, he spins around, and he throws himself on the bed, and he's wearing a top hat and tails.
Yeah.
And it was just the ludicrous nature of Kermit twirling and throwing himself on the bed that I was just like, these guys are fucking mental. It was just, and the fact that they were like, they're chucking the fucking Muppets out of a bus that's speeding past, and it's just so fucking silly. And I was just in bits laughing. But it's my favourite Muppet movie. It's not the best movie that the Muppets are in. That's Muppet Christmas Carol for me.
Yeah.
But the scene that I absolutely loved from The Great Muppet Caper, and it's one that you got to go back and watch because it is classic Muppets, is it's set in London. And there's a moment where Miss Piggy sort of finagles her way into a fashion house as an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sort of celebrating the fact that she's made it. She's on her way, and Kermit walks in. He thinks he's there to meet Diana Riggs' character, who is sort of the owner of this fashion house.
Yeah.
He misconstrues the situation and thinks that Miss Piggy is the owner, and she goes along with it. And he asks her out on a date, and she bullshits him and says that she's living at a specific address, which is like 17... Upmarket yeah. Street or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not wanting to lose face, she has to sort of break into the house to answer the door for when Kermit comes. And it's a house that is owned by John Cleese and Jones Anderson. And they're the two most boring aristocratic couple.
The weather. Awfully disappointing today.
Is it?
Yes. Yes, I know what you mean.
Meanwhile, Miss Piggy is sort of scaling the wall, coming in. Kermit's ringing the doorbell. And I'll tell you the other thing that I absolutely love about just the dynamic of the characters in that is that I don't know if it's true or not, but Christopher Reeve's portrayal of Clark Kent, for me, is almost a one-to-one imitation of Kermit. The same sort of gee whiz sort of like, oh, shucks,
yeah,
personality is Kermit. Like, I have to believe that when Christopher Reeve was thinking, how am I going to portray this sort of nebbish good guy, that he looked at Kermit the Frog and said, that's who Clark Kent is. Because I swear to you, if you were to compare Christopher Reeve's portrayal in the Superman the movie with Kermit in that film, they're identical. It's the same character.
Kermit
and Miss Piggy, I think, is a really good Lois Lane.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I love this. You somehow have managed...
It all comes back to Superman.
Fucking Superman. Gee, I was amazed because we've gone a few episodes without referencing Superman. Actually, nearly this entire season.
Because of the fucking guests.
It's those goddamn guests. But you know what was gas? I was just telling Liam there.
Who's Liam?
While you were on the tag, I was just talking to myself, right? And it's gas because That was my favorite. Listen, just forget about it. It's fine. It's fine. But you know, I love that. That's my favorite scene from the Muppets, the Caper movie as well. I love it because in that movie they utilize cameos in a good way, where they're not just like cameos for the sake of cameos, like just throwing Orson Welles in. And the gag is, it's Orson Welles.
Yeah, yeah.
This is John Cleese is playing a character in the scene. And and they find the two of them in the closet. And they're like going, and they're trying to give them recommendations for a restaurant. They just take it as a matter of fact.
No, what happens is, Kermit comes to the door and he's got like chocolates and what have you for Miss Piggy. And he's never been in a mansion before. And he wants to have a look around. And she's like, okay, she drags him in. They're trying to avoid the couple who heard the doorbell going, and they're wondering, who's at the door and what's going on?
Who is that guy back there?
Oh, just some sort of servant. Mm-hmm. This, of course, is the drawing room. Mm-hmm.
Did you decorate this place yourself?
Ah! I'll just close the door. It's very drafty. There's a chair and some walls.
Whirlwind tour, huh?
Oh, we have hot and cold running water. There's probably a bathtub and everything. Oh, here, I want to show you something. This is the closet.
Ah, sorry.
They have to hide. Miss Piggy drags him into a closet and hides. And unfortunately for them, John Cleese opens the door to the closet and you just see these two startled puppets, a pig and a frog, looking up. He's like, can I help you? And she's like, yes, we need recommendations for... Because she starts treating him as if he's her staff.
Yeah,
and Kermit is like... And he's like, well, this is a good restaurant. And she's like, thank you. They leave. It's fucking class. It's, movies are magic.
I'm staring into the closet, Neville.
You recall that pig I mentioned?
The one that was climbing up the side of the hut.
That's the chap.
Yes, I seem to recall that.
Well, he was in there just now, along with a lizard.
I see. And what did they want?
Name of a good restaurant. I told them the Dubonnet Club.
That's more of a supper club than a restaurant.
Yes, well, I tried to tell them that.
Don't blame yourself.
No.
And you were talking about Kermit, right? Kermit is the true north of the Muppets. He is the one, when everything goes to shit, if Kermit's the one that they all rely on, and if Kermit loses faith, that's when things really have hit rock bottom in any of these stories. But he rarely does.
So here's the thing. There's another scene which I wanted to mention. But in terms of my best, but the moment where I had like the most fun was that scene. But there's a scene that I think we can't not mention about the Muppets.
Yeah.
It's in their movie, their first movie. And it's the one that sort of establishes who the Muppets are, because they hit the ground running. They just sort of had this idea of the Muppets are trying to get famous. They're trying to be a successful vaudeville act, put on a variety show week after week. But the characters were sort of just dropped in and you got to know them as they were performing on that show. But the movie then does an origin story where you get to see all the Muppets coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie opens with one of the most famous songs of all of the Muppets back catalogue of great music that they've put out, written by Paul Williams, and it's The Rainbow Connection. And they said, we've got to establish who Kermit is. Kermit has got to have a soul that's present. He's got to be asking the big questions. And this is a movie all about asking questions, not giving you the answers, but the questions are sort of define who he is. They said, well, what does he have? He doesn't have anything. He's got a swamp. He's got water. He's got the light refracting off the water. And they said, oh, well, rainbows. The lyrics of that song are really beautiful, but it's Kermit basically like his I wish song. He's longing for something.
And then he says the most important part of the song to me, someday we'll find it. In other words, he doesn't have the answer. All he has is the question.
And it's that rainbow connection. And as I was saying earlier about the puppeteers being the personalities for the Muppets and Jim Henson bringing together this family of friends, where Frank Oz stayed with the Muppets for long after he had established himself as a great director in his own right with Bowfinger and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, like classic great comedies. He was still coming back to do Fozzie and Miss Piggy and what have you years and years after, because he had such a great affection and friendship with Jim Henson.
Someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me, I'm not done yet.
And that was true for a lot of the puppeteers. But in that first film where they're establishing who they are, it's sort of about them coming together, this family of oddballs.
This is the philosophy that is in the song. Who said that every wish would be heard and answered if wished on the morning star? Somebody thought of that. Someone believed it. Look what it's done so far. What he does in the song, what I think the song does, what Kermit does, is he empowers the audience. You, as what you picture, what you dream, you can make it happen.
And the movie ends with a spectacular shot, 150 different puppeteers puppeting all of the Muppets, and they reprise the song from the beginning of the film, The Rainbow Connection.
The end of the movie, life's like a movie, right, Jerome, indeed. Keep believing, keep pretending.
They wrote a reprise to the song that ends the movie, where the Muppets are sort of shooting the fictional version of the opening scene with Kermit in the swamp, and it all goes wrong. The set falls down, the ceiling blows out, and a rainbow comes in. And I'm going to get choked up again, because I think the song itself is a song. It's just sort of a ditty. It's lovely. It's bouncing along. And you're sort of dazzled by all of the spectacle of seeing 150 Muppets for the first time on the big screen, all singing. But it's the lyrics, and it's the ethos of the Henson Company. And it's the puppeteers, that family, passing something on to children that are watching. And I think the lyrics are so good that I want to read them out to you. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? That's part of what rainbows do. Rainbows are memories, sweet dream reminders. What is it you'd like to do? All of us watching and wishing we'd find it. I've noticed you're watching too. Someday you'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and you. Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we set out to do, thanks to the lovers, the dreamers, and you.
I'm really proud of that song because I think it actually catches the soul of the brilliant man that created Kermit the Frog. I think Jim Henson is as much a part of that song as Kenny or I. I hope you like it.
I think that's really beautiful. It's just telling all those little misfit kids out there, find your tribe, just like the Muppets have. Keep believing, keep dreaming. It's all about the lovers, the dreamers, and you.
Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. I think I can think of a better way to finish off.
Is that the first time that I have ever got tearful on a fucking podcast talking about the Muppets, but they broke me? I think I'm having a breakdown, Will.
Yeah,
I
we've gone
genuinely
through.
Feel.
Season one, we had even best tearjerker scene, and I've never seen you get this close.
I didn't cry once.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Like, I thought Liam brought everything I needed for this episode.
Who the fuck is Liam?
I mean, no, sorry. No, fuck. What? Sorry, it was Podbot. Anyway, listen, forget about that. But, geez, Kevin, you really...
Podbot, have I missed something here? What the fuck is going on?
Sorry, what? I was puking in a bucket.
Ah! I didn't know whether to cry or laugh.
Dun, dun, dun,
done. Oh, well done. Well done, well done, well done.
Life's like a movie. Write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we set out to do. Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers.
So we're going to take a little break again, but we have a few things I think we need to share with people, because we're not going away as usual. Christmas is coming up soon, and you know what? If you ask Santi very nicely for maybe another episode of The Best Bits, he might come through for you. He just might. So,
well, no, there's a few of you out there who have been quite naughty.
Pierce Ryan.
Particularly, yes, and that Rocky IV commentary, he was incredibly naughty.
Which is coming out next week, because what we're doing is we're going back into doing all the Best Bits commentaries. Those are some of the most fun that I have doing this podcast. The things get loopy.
Oh, Jesus.
I've never laughed so hard as on some of those eps.
I do this podcast just so I can do the audio commentaries. Because, yeah, exactly that. It's just, we just go slightly insane. We just go delirious at times. We really do.
Yeah, and we're bringing in guests and we're going to mix and match them. So we're going to have returning people that you've heard this season, but also new people that you haven't heard. But that's not all.
There's more? I don't believe you. What? What possibly more could we contribute or give to the podcast first?
Well, we're launching a Patreon that if you want to donate to the Patreon, we'll guarantee you that you get at least 2 extra commentaries every month with special guests, with returning guests, and some of them just by us. We'll even let it up to you guys, those that do subscribe, to pick some of the films. And we've recorded some of them. We've had a laugh doing them. And I can't wait for you guys to hear them. So we thought we would add that to it. Extra shows.
Yeah.
Because we don't work hard enough.
But also the thing about it is it just helps, you know, doing the podcast, we're doing it off our own backs, but there are costs that we're incurring just to make it happen. So even if we can cover the costs of making this show, it's great.
And we don't have those Henson movies. They didn't happen for us, so, you know.
Yeah, that's a problem. So is this us? Is this us for the end of the... Are we done? It. We're wrapping it up now for the season.
We're wrapping it unless Santi brings another episode, but that's it until season 3 in the new year.
And thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to everyone who's given us those ratings and reviews on Apple, and all the feedback that we've been getting is, you know, fantastic, and it keeps us, encourages us to keep going on. And to all our guests for coming on this season, you know, it's been great having you all on.
Thank you to everyone that's listened this year.
Absolutely.
And
love
more
it.
To come, I suppose.
Thanks, everyone.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff.
If you have any notes, comments, scene suggestions, or just want to get in touch with us, email us at bestbitspodcast@gmail.com. And that was the show.
We got our money's worth tonight.
But we paid nothing.
That's what we got.
Right, another season over.
Thanks, Zach, for that.
Cheers, Podbot. Thanks for all your work this season.
I'm off.
Jesus, all right. Whoops. Huh. Best Santa Claus scene. Huh.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Fuck off. Talk to you, you stupid cunt.
The best bits we can really have, and the other guy. Best bits we can really have.
The other guy,
you know his name.
That guy,
what's his face?
That guy,
what's his name?
Ignorant as fuck.
With Kevin Lee Han.
How are you, Will?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm grand. Did you like that theme tune?
I love that theme tune. It might have been my favourite so far.
I think it was as well. Definitely, I'd say it's definitely your favourite.
Yeah. Hey, I was at one of the great Irish traditions at the weekend.
My niece's communion down at Cork.
Cork. Go on. I can't wait.
Well, I want to say this, right? Kevin just slips, limply. I said to my daughter in school, on Monday mornings, they do news. What's your news, right?
Nudes and bio.
And my daughter said, she kept my picture up from school, and she said, I said, did you do your news today? And she says,
yeah, but I didn't really get to say much of what I wanted to tell him.
You know, so she wanted to tell him about the trip down to Cork, like, you know. And
is this just a ploy for the teacher to get all the gossip out of the kids?
Yeah, I think all the teachers do it. All the teachers get their children to do news on a Monday morning. And they just get all the gossip.
My mum and dad were racing the head off each other on Saturday night, and on Sunday they went for dinner to make up.
Oh, very good. Caramel, do you have any news?
My dad crashed the car again.
Let me tell you, right? So Ellie said to me, she said, no, I didn't really get to say much, like, you know. And I went, oh, well, thank God, like, you know. But then as it turned out she said everything. She was like going, oh, we talked about, you know, your, I said, well, thank God you didn't get to tell him about my
shaving foam exploding in my changing bag. He says, oh, I did get to tell him that. I was like, oh, right, okay. Well, did you tell him about, you know, your cousin, you know, the girl who was getting her communion, breaking her leg the night before the communion? Oh, yeah, I told him that as well. I was like, okay, right. Did you tell him about,
So
turns out that my...
Go on.
At the last communion, right, they had a photographer came over and took photographs. And right, listen, I can see he wants to cut in, but let me just finish this and I'll get off it and we'll start the timer. As we kind of got together for timer a photograph started. With me and my niece, no, hold on, with my niece, right, he drops the camera and he says to me, love the podcast. And I was, what?
He just, another fella, yeah, said that to you.
Well, it was the same guy who said, remember I said 2 years ago.
He's still listening. Niece's.
I don't know if he's still listening. Oh, well, he said it to me 2 years ago, so he's probably not listening anymore.
Are we on a delay?
I don't know.
I think we might be because we're tripping over each other.
Okay, let's hang up and join in again. How does that sound?
It sounds fantastic.
Welcome to the Best Bits Patreon. Give us money.
Hello, Will. How are you?
Hi.
It's great to get on mic for another mini bits.
Yeah.
Raw.
Does that seem better?
That does seem better. Listen, seen a load of stuff.
Let's start the timer.
Okay. I saw Monkey Man. I saw Civil War. I saw Conan O'Brien Must Go. Sugar, mm-hmm. Fallout, Ripley, the Steve Martin documentary, tons of stuff. Late Night with the Devil. I keep wanting to say Last Night with the Devil. Baby Reindeer, The Jinx has come back. So I want to talk about all of those with you. So that's what we're going to talk about. And for those who aren't on the Patreon, bye-bye.
Look, tough look.